everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani on IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I have a great show planned for you today. My guest is Marie Ozer. She is an author of a new book called The Skinny on Soy, and she's also the executive president and executive producer of Veg TV, and I'll be telling you more about her and inviting her on in just a little bit. But first, I want to go over some things in the news, some things that are going on Long Island and New York, and just have a little chat. So first, I just wanted to let everyone know that my Thanksgiving feast that we did the Tuesday before Thanksgiving in Feeding the Homeless was a huge success. We cooked more food than we've ever cooked before, lots of turkeys. And I think I personally cooked 48, and you know, as a vegetarian, someone who doesn't cook meat, that's a big deal for me. Plus, a lot of turkeys already cooked were donated here, and we had over 150 people coming through the IE Green Homestead to help lend a hand in cooking, and it was just a wonderful, wonderful event. And I then had my family holiday, and now I'm taking a deep breath and gearing up for the Christmas event. We do a similar thing for Christmas. It's not the same because it's really not as much work. After all the Thanksgiving fixings, this one's really a breeze. We just do an Italian feast of baked ziti, Caesar salad, garlic bread, brownies, apple pie, and keep it simple. But of course, we partner with the Riverfront Food Pantry, so there's also a mobile food pantry there, and we collect toys and coats, and it's just great. And so if you're interested in helping, there is a sign up on my website. I also, sent one out in my weekly newsletter. If you don't get my newsletter, you can sign up for that on my website as well at iegreen.com. And every week I send out a list of all the events that I talk about on my radio show. And a lot of them are in New York, but a lot of them are scattered about the country, but are really geared towards environmentalism and our local food systems. So I want to share some of those with you. Now, there's an architectural design workshop in Somerville, Massachusetts, taking place starting tomorrow. It's tomorrow and Saturday. And it's the beginning of a series of these interdisciplinary workshops that are focused on collaborative design and innovation in urban agriculture and vertical farming. And I have a link to signing up on my website. But if you're interested, it's being sponsored by Greentown Labs in Somerville, Massachusetts. Also, on December 2nd, there's a Food for Thought Library Workshop, and this is a Long Island food history from family farms and oysters to craft spirits. And it's being given at the Brentwood Library in Brentwood. And there is a keynote speaker, T.W. Barrett, and he's a native of Nassau County, Long Islander. He's a food writer and a communications consultant. And there's also a panel discussion. So it should be really a great event if you're interested in the history of food on Long Island. And it's really also geared for people who work in the library information systems to really, so that they can really have be more helpful to their clients who come into the library. Also, on December 4th through 6th, the Soil and Nutrition Conference is going on up at Kripalu Institute in Stockbridge, Massachusetts, and that's run by the Bio-Nutrient Food Association. And I took a workshop with them up at Stone Barns, and it was wonderful. So if you are a new farmer or actually even a seasoned farmer and want to learn some new skills and ways to enhance your soil, the people running this workshop are really knowledgeable, and it's great. December 5th through 8th is the Growing for the Future Beginning Farmer Rancher Conference, and that is also a great event that's taking place. That is an online web webinar, and it's being sponsored by Slow Food USA. So that's free, and it's right online. So you can find out about that. I have a link from my website or Slow Food USA's website. Also on next Tuesday night, Slow Food North Shore is having a potluck meeting at the Cinema Arts Center. We do a potluck just because we know that food really brings people out and helps break down walls and enhance communication. So we start with some food, and then we just talk about the future of Slow Food North Shore, events that we'd like to have. We are also hosting an event the following week at the Cinema Arts Center. We are screening a film. The film is... Where's the film? The film is called Eating You Alive on December 12th. And Slow Food North Shore is co-sponsoring it with the Cinema Arts Center. And that's a great film on the foods that we eat and why we're so sick and what foods we can eat to make ourselves better. So that's always, you know, a wonderful, these are great films to just educate us and wake us up to some of the things that we need to do to switch things around. Also coming up, NOFA New York is having a planning meeting right here on Long Island. It's a brainstorming session at the Cornell Cooperative Extension in Suffolk County on December 7th from 3:30 to 6:30. Anyone who is interested in local farming, agriculture, please come. We need everyone to participate to really try to build a Long Island chapter of NOFA New York. We used to have one, and it's kind of went away, and so we're trying to get it back. So please come to that, and of course, stay tuned for NOFA's annual winter workshop, which is also coming up, and that is, you know, in January, but save the date for that, because that's a great thing. It's January 20th. Through the 22nd, I believe. Unfortunately, it's the same weekend as the Women's March in Washington, so you have to pick one of those, but it's a great, you know, the NOFA Winter Conference is always great, so if you can get to that, that's worth going to. And then there's a sign-up, as I mentioned before, for the Christmas event, if you're interested in cooking for the homeless, here at the IE Green Homestead. We'll be cooking from December 18th and 19th and serving on the 20th. So check that out. So there's also some things I wanted to share with you. You know, as always, I have petitions on my website that you can sign on to. With the change of the administration, things are really, really changing. And you know, not necessarily for the better. And so it's really important that we all get involved, and it's going to be really hard to make changes on the national level. So people are encouraging us to get involved on the more local and state level. And so there are certainly things that we can all do to get involved with that. But first, you know, there is a petition to try to ask President-elect Trump to not appoint Myron Ebel as the Environmental Protection Agency person. You know, he is the one that Trump is picking to run the Environmental Protection Agency, and he is a climate change denier, and it just will not work out. So, so please sign that petition. You know, there's also a petition again for glyphosate to get that out of our food system. There's quite a few petitions there, so please take a look at the petitions I have and please sign those. Also, write some letters and call your congressmen and senators and assemblymen. It's really just, I can't stress enough how important it is that we all really take these issues to heart and get involved. So also, last week there was a food tank had their first summit up in Chicago, and you can listen in on YouTube to some of the speakers. speakers that were there. And there's also, they just published a list of 20 organizations fighting for food justice, which is a great list, and also tips about food waste. So if you are not familiar with Food Tank, check them out. They're a great organization, and they offer a lot of these lists for free, and you can also join them and join in on some of these webinars that they run that are just really, really great. There's also a discussion as to whether hydroponic can be classified as organic. There's a lot of elders or old farmers who have been working in the soil who will tell you that if you don't have the soil, you can't have organic, that organic is all about the soil. And I tend to side with my elder farmers who have been working the soil for so many years, just, you know, in my perception of the magic of the universe. There's so many things that happen that we can't see and that we don't understand and that we just have to accept. And the magic that happens in the soil with the nutrients that come up into the plant, there's no way you can replicate that exactly by just giving plants nutrients and water. The magic that happens in the soil cannot be isolated, and we can't dissect it. You know, the magic that happens when everything works together is just too special. And so we really need to consider that when labeling organic. It's certainly better than conventional. I take that. It does, you know, it's not being sprayed with pesticides and doesn't have glyphosate in it. So it's certainly better, but we still don't know what those nutrients are that are being fed to them and where those nutrients come from. And like I said, the special magic that's missing is missing. So we don't want to, we need to come up with a new labeling, you know, a hydroponic labeling so that people have a choice. You know, again, it's about the transparency in our food and having choices and being informed as consumers so that we can make the choice that best fits us and our ethics and our budget, et cetera. So let's just all push for food transparency. So I want to share with you a recipe before I invite Marie Ozer onto our show. This week, I made a cranberry orange sour cream coffee cake. Now, it's not my typical recipe. You know, most of the recipes I share with you are vegan. Many of them, if not most of them, are gluten-free. But this week, I had lots of leftovers from Thanksgiving. I had a lot of cranberry sauce left over, and I had sour cream left over. So I was trying to find recipes, to come up with recipes where I could use up some of those leftovers. And I have a job coming up this weekend that I'm catering where, you know, as long as the food is good quality, it does not have to be gluten-free and dairy-free. So I made this orange cranberry sour cream coffee cake that just was great, and I got to use up some of my cranberry sauce and sour cream. So I'm going to share that with you now. And this recipe is, I had doubled the recipe, so it's a larger portion. It serves 24 to 30 large squares. I cut it even into small squares, so I got about 50 out of it. Okay, so what you need are 6 cups of organic all-purpose flour, 1 tablespoon baking powder, 2 teaspoons baking soda, 1 teaspoon of sea salt, 3 cups sour cream, and of course I use organic sour cream, organic flour, etc., 4 teaspoons vanilla extract, 1 teaspoon lemon extract, 3 sticks of organic unsalted butter softened, 2 cups of organic sugar, 1 cup of organic dark brown sugar, 6 large eggs, organic, of course, at room temperature, 1 cup of chopped walnuts, and 3 cups of my cranberry relish. I have that recipe on my website, but basically the cranberry relish is cooked in some cranberry juice with maple syrup and orange zest, and then it's boiled, and then I add I add some walnuts to that. So it's a very simple recipe, just cranberries, maple syrup, cranberry juice, and walnuts and orange zest, and that's all that's in it. So I use that. If you don't have that, you can just use fresh cranberries. Well, actually, you can make the cranberry relish, or you can buy some jarred cranberry sauce. Then I also made a glaze and crumb topping for the top. For the glaze, I used 2 cups of organic powdered sugar and 3 tablespoons of orange juice. And then for the crumb topping, I mixed 2 cups of brown sugar, 2 cups of walnuts, 1 cup of oats, 1 cup of flour, and a pinch of salt with, I used a stick of butter, but you could also use a cup of oil or half a cup of oil to make the crumb topping. So I preheated the oven to 350. I lined a chafing pan. Like I said, I had doubled this is a doubled recipe. So I lined a chafing pan with parchment paper, both the bottom and the sides, and I sprayed that and put flour on it. And then in a bowl, I mixed together all the dry ingredients, the flour, the baking powder, the baking soda, and the salt. And in a separate bowl, I mixed the sour cream, the lemon extract, and the vanilla extract. And then in using an electric mixer, I creamed the butter and both sugars together until they were really fluffy. And you have to scrape down the sides quite a few times to incorporate that so that all of the butter and sugar really get fluffy so that it looks like you've already added the eggs, but you haven't. At that point, once it's really light and fluffy, then you can add the eggs one at a time, scraping down the bowl after each addition. Once that's all incorporated, then add half of the flour mixture and mix that up. Add all of the sour cream mixture, and then add the remaining flour into the mixer. After each addition, you're going to mix it a little bit to incorporate it. When it's fully incorporated, you're going to fold in the walnuts, and then you spread half of the batter into the pan, spread the cranberry relish on top of that, spreading it out, and then the remaining batter on top. So the cranberry relish is sandwiched in between the two layers of the batter. And then take a chopstick or a skewer and just swirl the cranberry and the batter together so that it's getting incorporated into the cake batter. And then you're going to bake that in the 350 oven for 50 or 60 minutes, basically until a knife comes out clean from the center. Everyone's oven is different, so check the cake halfway through, and if you need to turn it around, if the back is getting darker than the top, the front, turn it around halfway through, and then let it cool. Place it on a wire rack so that it can really cool well. Then I made the glaze, and I spread that on top. And then I put the crumb topping on top of the glaze. So I put the glaze on, and then the crumb topping goes right away, and that makes it stick. So that's it. So enjoy the recipe. If you make it, let me know how you like it. And that's it. And now it's my pleasure to introduce my guest, Marie Ozer. She is... like I said, she is the author of a new book called Skinny on Soy, which is a much-needed book. It puts to rest many of the myths that revolve around soy foods. We actually had a great restaurant out here that I went to all the time. You know, they served organic vegetables and organic meats for those that ate meat. But somewhere along the line, they decided that soy wasn't good, and they cut out all of their soy, so all of their tofu, all of their tempeh, soy sauce, miso soup, all these things that were real draws for vegetarians. And sure enough, within a year, they were out of business because the draw is vegetarians that care about all the organic food, not as many meat eaters. So they ended up out of business. But anyway, there's just so many myths about dangers of soy. And as a vegetarian, I depend on soy and love soy. And so Marie is here to dispel some of those myths. This is her fifth book, and she's a healthy lifestyle expert. Her focus is on nutrition and disease prevention. She used to have a career in television advertising, and she left that to pursue her interest in food, health, nutrition, and the environment. She's president, host, and executive producer of Veg TV, and has been producing content since 2001. And she's also the managing editor of EcoMe. That's a leading environmental site with a popular blog. And I'm so happy to have her on. Marie, are you with me?
I am. I am, Bhavani. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I love what you do, and I'm so thrilled to have you on and to dispel some of these myths for my listeners because, you know, I shared that experience of this restaurant. It was like, you know, I live in a restaurant desert, basically. Mm. I mean, not really. There's loads of restaurants, but as far as a healthy restaurant where you can get good vegetarian food, where they serve organic, none. And this was the only one that all of a sudden was doing organic, and they were really committed to it. And then the chef's wife took that course, some course that told her soy was bad, and next thing you know, all the soy, even tamari, was off the tables. They didn't have any soy, and vegetarians stopped going there because, I mean, you know, how often do you want to go out to eat and just get a bowl of stewed lentils, you know? It gets boring after a while. So anyway, they didn't last, unfortunately. So
well, then, you know, that's a problem, and you'll see more and more. We've been seeing it happen with manufacturers who know full well in many cases that there's nothing wrong with soy. But because of all the misinformation that's been out there, because it's been going on for like 15 years now, consumers have been, you know, influenced. And so manufacturers are out there putting prominently on their label, soy-free, doesn't contain soy. They've gone to hemp and other proteins, which are, you know, an almond protein, which are all good. But, you know, soy is really a standout among foodstuffs for so many reasons. And the reason I wrote the book was just for that reason, that there's been so much misinformation out there, and it's been posted and reposted by just a handful of people who I call soy bashers, who've pretty much made a cottage industry out of anti-soy rhetoric and being anti-soy and anti-soy proponents. So that was why I wrote the book, and it's being really very well received.
You know, I also have heard so often the connection between breast cancer and soy. You know, one of my clients that I was cooking for, are you still on?
Oh, yes, I'm here. I mean, I was here when I blew my nose in the middle of your I had no idea I was live, so okay, yes.
One of my clients who had breast cancer, you know, I cook for people very often that are ill or just for families as a personal chef. And so one client, you know, she had breast cancer. That's not why I was cooking for her, but she got it while I was there in her employee. And she, you know, I knew she was having some radiation treatment, so I thought, oh, I'll make her some miso soup because that's so good to counteract some of the radiation. And she said, oh, no, I can't have that. I can't have soy. And then later that day, she comes back with, like, Dunkin' Donuts. And I'm like, what? You know, the doctor tells you you can't have soy, but he doesn't say don't have sugar, when we all know sugar feeds cancer. So
yes. The misinformation, it's kind of an engine that keeps going. There are so many claims. So much of it is outrageous. About 70 years of research has been done with soy, and there have been many studies that have shown that soy protein, soy phytoestrogens have very strong anti-cancer properties, very strong. There are peptides in soybeans and something called, they're high in oleic, O-L-E-I-C, oleic acid, that there has been, the researchers have many, many, many times observed bioactivity between the peptides in soybeans and various kinds of human cancer cells. In fact, it's been shown to significantly inhibit cell cancer growth by as much as 73% in colon cancer alone, and even in liver cancer, which is virulent, right? 70% of the human cell lines were shrunk. You know, the tumors were shrunk. So it was demonstrated many, many, many times. But, you know, there was some conflicting research. One or two studies were done. I can't quote, it's in my book, but I can't quote exactly where it happened years ago. And they said that what they had concluded was that because of the phytoestrogens in soy, and that phyto meaning it's Greek for plant estrogens, which are 1,000 times weaker than human estrogen and are not estrogen. They are not estrogen. They're not human estrogen. I cannot stress that enough, because they felt that they would that if you ate soy foods and you had these estrogen dependent tumors in your breasts, that it would cause them to grow. That has been totally debunked. It's been, you know, other studies have been done since then. They've never been able to, you know, to replicate what was done in those two studies. There was a Dr. Xu out in Shanghai. It's called the Shanghai Breast Cancer Survival Study, and it was found, you know, the soybeans that have phytoestrogens are also known as isoflavones. They were shown to be not only safe but potentially beneficial for breast cancer patients. The study included almost 6,000 women between 20 and 75 years of age. And it was published in the American Journal of Medicine, the JAMA, J-A-M-A, you know. What they showed was that women who were diagnosed with breast cancer and who consume soy foods, such as like tofu and soy milk, edamame, they reduced their risk of recurrence by 32%. So much that you've heard, you know, out there, a lot of the anti-soy rhetoric, the opposite is actually true.
So it doesn't matter whether you're the type of breast cancer you have, whether you're estrogen receptive or not.
Either estrogen dependent. That's exactly right. Does not matter. Does not matter. Soy will help you to prevent the occurrence and the recurrence of cancer. If you consume soy, you will heal a lot better, and the recurrence, there was a 29% decreased risk of death compared to women who consumed little or no soy.
Now, I know in your book you talk about, you know, the importance of soaking beans and grains before cooking.
It isn't just soaking. It's just you soak them. You soak soybeans. One of the claims was that soy contained dangerous substances, that it was like, and they actually used the word poison. The claims are really non-issues. The fact is that there's something called hemagglutinin. It's like a clot-promoting substance that can cause blood cells to clump together. Now, hemagglutinin, it's also called lectin, right? So you can find lectin in grains and dairy products and tree nuts and nightshade vegetables like tomatoes and potatoes, eggplants, peppers, and other legumes. They all contain lectin. But the lectin in the plant seeds are actually there to play a role in the process of seed germination, so that, you know, in the earliest stages when the tiny plant begins to emerge, right, begin to grow, the concentration of lectins in the plant, they're thought to contribute to the survival of the seed, which decreases over time as the plant grows and matures. The reason that this is a non-issue is that nobody eats soybeans or grains or anything else like that raw. You don't eat them raw.
Right. Right.
And cooking, it deactivates the lectins. So, I mean, we've known for 10,000 years that you have to cook beans in order to eat them. Otherwise, you'd be like, you couldn't consume them. They're like stones. You know how hard a dried soybean is, right? So, I mean, red kidney beans actually contain 10 times the level of lectins that you find in soybeans. But they're rendered harmless when they're cooked properly. So, you know, one thing I like to say, too, is that, you know, the FAO, the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations, they are quoted as saying that these lectins, which are found in raw soybeans, has apparently no observable dietary effect, good or bad, and it's easily deactivated by heat.
Uh-huh.
So, a non-issue. You know, oftentimes the soy bashers take half-truths and non-truths and weave stories around it. And the internet is like an echo chamber, isn't it?
Right, right. Well, I always recommend, you know, people purchase, of course, organic soybeans or organic tofu. But now you're also seeing sprouted tofu. Can you explain the difference between how it's processed, regular tofu versus sprouted tofu, and is it better to eat sprouted
tofu? The process isn't that much different. The soybeans are sprouted before they are, you know, fermented. Not fermented, but, you know, coagulated. With sprouted beans or grains or anything that's sprouted is going to have many times. So they're just going to be, the difference is it's going to be higher even than in protein than soy already is. You know, there are eight grams of protein in a glass of soy milk. There are 12 grams of soy protein in a 4-ounce serving of tofu, and in tempeh, almost 16 grams of protein in a 4-ounce serving. That's like a half cup.
Right.
So it's already very high in protein. Anything that's sprouted is going to be higher than that.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
But it doesn't make one more healthy. Well, I guess it's higher in protein, but there's nothing wrong with tofu if it's not sprouted. It's still.
No, there's nothing wrong with tofu that's not sprouted. There's nothing wrong with soy foods that are not fermented. You know, the whole lectin issue was built around this. Well, you could maybe eat some soy foods if they're fermented, you know, because the fermenting process will reduce those substances. And while that's true, these people were the first people in the history of cuisine to even put forth the idea that fermented soy foods were the only safe foods to eat. All, you know, soy food, there's nothing unsafe about soy. It is nutritionally very high it's very high in protein, fiber, both soluble and insoluble, bioavailable calcium, vitamins, minerals, and those isoflavones that are so healthy and have been proven to be so beneficial for the body.
Mm-hmm. Another myth that I had heard was, and I know it's a myth, I'm a big believer in soy foods as well, so I'm not one of those bashers. But, you know, some people think that it's bad for your bones, that, you know, that soybeans leach out calcium and vitamin D from your bones.
So interesting.
Can you put that to rest for us?
Let me help you with that. Yeah, again, the opposite is true. Let me back up a little and talk about cow milk. Cow milk, like other, you know, animal products, contains protein. The protein you find in animal products is sulfur-based. And because it's sulfur-based, when you consume soy, let's say you consume cow's milk, your body takes in the sulfur protein. It immediately goes acidic. Most of us know that your body your pH needs to be alkaline. So if your body goes acidic, it's going to automatically trigger the body to want to buffer that acidity and draw the blood back to being more alkaline. And the way that it does that, calcium is the best buffer, right? Where does the body get calcium? It leaches calcium from the bones in order to buffer the sulfur-based animal protein, and that is a cause of osteoporosis. All those campaigns, you know, drink milk to avoid osteoporosis, the opposite is true. Soy milk, on the other hand, soy protein is not sulfur-based. And according to, well, Mark Messina is the most prominent of soy researchers. He is quoted extensively in my book. According to his studies, the calcium in soy is actually well absorbed. You know, critics of soy food say that it's high in phytates, another one of those, you know, one of those substances, which inhibit the absorption of iron, zinc, and calcium. But the absorption of calcium from soy foods is actually surprisingly good. You know, not only that, a number of studies have shown that soy foods actually protect bone health, that soy protein, when substituted for animal protein, it decreases urinary calcium excretion. So getting calcium from soy foods that are either naturally rich in this nutrient or fortified with it, it's a good idea. You know,
I also want to just mention that dark leafy green vegetables is a huge that, you know, don't want to drink soy milk.
Make yourself some soy. Make a nice cheese sauce with soy milk and nutritional yeast, and you've got a boatload of calcium. Absolutely. You know, the nurses study that was done years ago with 70,000 nurses showed that the nurses who had consumed soy, who were drinking soy milk as opposed to cow's milk, they did not have the osteoporosis or the bone fractures, but to any degree compared to those who were drinking cow milk, who did not avail themselves of soy foods or soy milk. So it's been proven over and over again that that soy is a far healthier foodstuff than any animal product that you'll find out there, and as far even among legumes, I mean, it's a standout.
Yeah, my problem with soy milk is the carrageenan and the gar gum and the stabilizers, all the other stuff.
You know, anytime you're buying prepared foods, you're going to deal with that. Personally, I am a huge proponent of making your own soy milk. And you know what makes it a quick and easy method? I mean, I do it. I make it every week. I have a soy milk maker, an automatic soy milk maker. It takes 20 minutes to make the best tasting soy milk, better than anything you could buy off the shelf. I get my non-GMO soybeans from Iowa, from Laura Soybeans out of Iowa, from Chambers Family Farms. I mean, they make beautiful, white, delicious soy milk. I've got, I think it's $99 for a SoyaJoy soy milk maker, right? They've been out there. They're one of the first ones out there, and they last years and years. You can make absolutely delicious, nothing could be possibly fresher for pennies. I tell you, for pennies. And you're spending $4 or $5 a half gallon for soy milk with carrageenan, and we don't even know what that is.
Right. And I tell people the same thing with almond milk. I make almond milk just with my Vitamix, and mm-hmm. it's great as well.
Yeah, you can do it. You know, with the Vitamix, if I had to do the whole squeeze, I would not be doing it. But the cheesecloth and the squeezing, I'm telling you, you soak the beans, you throw them in the bottle of the bottom of the canister with the water. You put the top on, you press start, in 20 minutes you've got milk. And if you're making raw almond milk, in 3 minutes you've got raw almond milk, and it's cold.
Really?
Yeah.
That's great. I'll check that out. Thank you. Marie, let's take a couple-minute break, and when we come back, I want to delve in a little bit more about some of the other health benefits that that you talk about in your book. So everyone listening, don't go anywhere. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network and my guest, Marie Ozer, and we'll be right back.
It's not liberal. It's not conservative. It's progressive. The truth that empowers. Right here on PRN, the Progressive Radio Network.
Have you ever listened to Anthony Robbins, watched the movie called The Secret, or read about The Power of Positive Thinking from the perspective of any of the many fine authors who have written about the subject? They all focus on the law of attraction, which governs every second of every life of every person in the universe. Like attracts like, and everything you do, feel, and think about as a regular way of being determines your life experiences. PRN's new show, LOA Today, explores all aspects of this magnificent law of the universe every Thursday evening from 7 to 8 p.m. Join hosts Walt Thiessen and Yuona June Thiessen as we explore the law of attraction each week. That's LOA Today, Thursday evenings from 7 to 8 p.m. here on PRN.
Hi, I'm David Crow, host of The Infectious Myth that airs at 2 p.m. U.S. Eastern Time here on PRN. I use data to deconstruct the myths that infect the modern world. Myths within health and medicine, other areas of science, the justice system, society, media, censorship, and politics. Join me for challenging interviews and discussions. Listen live, as a podcast, or by dialing 701-719-0990. Thanks for listening.
And welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I'm here with my guest, Marie Ozer, the author of the new book, The Skinny on Soy. Marie, you with me?
I am, Bhavani. I am.
So, you know, I know we're dispelling some of these rumors that we've all heard about the dangers of soy. And, you know, I always just go back to people and go, you're talking about a bean. How dangerous could it be? But anyway, what about the claim that eating soy produces feminine characteristics in men? Any truth to that?
None at all. None at all. You know, it goes back to the whole phytoestrogen question. People see the word phytoestrogen and they think, estrogens. And so they've built a whole fantasy all around various aspects of phytoestrogens as if you're taking estrogen into your body, and you're not. I can tell you that one of the scientists that I interviewed in my book was Lawrence Ross. He's a doctor from a professor at the University of Illinois Medical School, and his specialty is infertility and microsurgery, male infertility and microsurgery. And what he said was that, to his knowledge, unto the present time, there have been no significant trials of soy saying that there would be any level that might cause a problem, or that consuming soy could cause a problem. It's a theoretical concern that these people have been kicking around, and there is no evidence that it is detrimental. There are populations in all over Asia that have been consuming soy for millennia, right, for 5,000-6,000 years. And what I always say is, you know, I point to China and I say that is the only country on earth that has been forced to legislate birth control because they have too many people. I don't think they have a problem with their sperm count. I don't think that, you know, their men are walking around, you know, more feminized than any other culture across the world. There is one very non-credible source online that is actually stated over and over again that consuming soy has caused an increase in homosexuality in the population here in America. And I can tell you unequivocally that homosexuality, as you well know, has been with us since the dawn of time. It has always been at 10%. It hasn't increased from 10%. And there is no difference between cultures that consume soy and cultures that don't consume soy as to the level or the proclivity toward, being homosexual. So, I mean, that's the kind of nonsense that they put out there. Mark Messina, again, the prominent, he's the most prominent soy researcher, has evaluated clinical evidence, regarding the concerns that isoflavone exposure would have a feminizing effect on men. And many of his studies, but one in particular, showed that there were no feminizing effects on men at intact levels equal to and even considerably higher than those of typical Asian males typically consumed in Asia. So what Dr. Messina said was that in contrast to the results, and a lot of these studies are rodent studies, and we can talk about that, their findings from recently published metadata and subsequently published studies show that neither isoflavone supplements nor isoflavone-rich soy diets affect total or free testosterone levels in any way. And there are about 11 pages, 10 or 11 pages of citations in my book, The Skinny on Soy. I don't carry all the detailed citations around in my head. I just remember that Mark is Dr. Messina, I'm sorry, Dr. Messina has been very involved. You can your listeners can look him up online as well for his research, or they can buy my book and check it out, where I actually explain research, how it's done, and why some of the research done with rodents, with animals, has really no relation to the human, the human body and the human condition.
Right. Well, I always say to my listeners, use your common sense. If you look at the Blue Zone diet, for instance, or, Blue Zones, where you look at cultures that are healthy, that are living into their hundreds. And, the Asian populations are right in there with that. They have, until we've introduced the American diet into their diet, they had relatively very little cancer and were much healthier than our population. So, and they've always eaten a lot of soy.
Well, I think that, John Robbins says it best. If soy is so bad for you, he said, then how come it is such an important part of the diet of the people who live the longest of anybody in the world, Okinawa? Talking about this Blue Zones. That's a Blue Zone.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so, and I think just our food culture, it loves shaking things up and making people not know what to do, so that they can use their marketing to sell products. When you see anything that's written really big on the outside of a box, gluten-free or fat-free or low-fat or any of these things, those claims are all just for marketing, and I recommend people staying away. But we've had lots of myths around olive oil, too. In the Mediterranean diet, they've been sautéing in olive oil for eons. And now people are like, you can't sauté with olive oil. And I just, I debunk that as well. I say, look at the cultures that have been doing that. And they
haven't heard that. I've heard that, there are people who there are people, there are professionals, there are experts who would rather we did not ingest any free-flowing oils. They say, but for me, I use a couple tablespoons or a tablespoon of olive oil. It's the only oil I use, except for maybe avocado oil once in a while. And it's a monounsaturated oil. And like everything else, you're not going to drink it. It isn't something you're going to, use gobs of. You use it sparingly, but I think that it adds something to the diet, definitely.
Right, right. And is it possible to consume too much soy? Do people have to worry about, I know you talked earlier about soy, substances being poison, but I'm not talking about that, but I'm just talking about eating too much soy. Is that something people have to worry about?
No more than eating too much of anything else. There's nothing specific to soy that's going to cause you to limit your intake of soy. You know, it's is it your diet, for me, I'm vegan, so my diet is probably 60-some percent carbs, and there are three macronutrients, so that's carbohydrates, fat, and protein. And the carbohydrates, as you probably know, will become, that's your energy. You know, you derive your energy from the carbs. The protein is bodybuilding, so that you need that for your organs, for your muscles to, you know, replenish and replace. And then there's fat. The interesting thing about fat is it's the only macronutrient that goes seamlessly from fat to fat. If you eat too much of it, you know, if you're not, you know, and of course then there's alcohol, which is not a food group, but if you're drinking alcohol at all, you need to know that your body's going to burn that first and store everything else as fat, right? So, no, I would say no more than any other thing. It isn't just soy protein. Soluble and insoluble fiber that is very valuable. There are the isoflavones. I eat soy every day. I have soy milk every day. I make my own soy milk, so I have soy milk in my cereal. I use it in sauces. I cooked this Thanksgiving, and I made a wonderful brown sauce with soy milk. You can do so many wonderful things with soy. I would say that, you know, if you wanted to compare soy milk to cow milk, for instance, cow milk has so much saturated fat. You know, it provides, you know, more than 9 times as much saturated fat as soy milk. You know, so it's far more likely to contribute to coronary heart disease. You know, that's the one thing about that has been studied most with soy, its ability to reduce the levels of the cholesterol levels in the body without messing with the balance. By that I mean that if your doctor is giving you statins, those statins are reducing the level of cholesterol in your body, but it's reducing the LDL and the HDL, which is not a good thing. Not a good thing. When you consume soy, it'll lower the LDL bad cholesterol levels in the bloodstream, and it will raise the HDL levels in the bloodstream. So it's a very good thing. So there are so many health benefits associated with soy, especially if you use soy foods to replace animal products in your body. It has a double whammy effect.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I think that's, you know, important information for everyone to know, because, you know, these rumors that your book, you know, brings out, is just really overwhelming sometimes. I've even heard that some people say it causes thyroid problems. I've heard it.
There are foods out there that are called goitrogens, and they're called goitrogens because they do have an effect on the thyroid. They would be cauliflower, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, soy, and other foods as well that are considered goitrogens. But I would say, you know, that the effect that this would have, if on a healthy thyroid, wouldn't affect it at all. If you are hypothyroid, for instance, you are probably taking thyroxine, a thyroid medication, and the only thing that you need to be cognizant of is it would be best to eat soy foods. You can still have soy foods 3 or 4 times a week, but it would be good to take your medication at a different time of the day. The other thing is, if you have a compromised thyroid, your doctor is monitoring you and will know if there are any changes, but it would be negligible at best.
Mm-hmm. So, Marie, we're almost out of time. Can you share with my listeners the best way to find your book or to connect with you on the Internet?
Sure. The Skinny on Soy is available on Amazon.com. It's available at veganpublishers.com. You can find me at vegtv.com. If you go to EcoMe, where I'm managing editor, you can go to the blog menu and drop the drop-down food and health. It's a very popular blog. Dr. Greger, you'll find him there. You'll find Neil Barnard there. That's a great place to find me. And if your readers or your listeners, I'm sorry, would like to contact me with any further questions, they can email me at info@vegtv.com.
Wonderful. Well, Marie, thank you so much for joining us. It's been really great. I love your book, and I think it's really serving a very, very important purpose, because there are so many people out there that have cancer who, you know, are quick to blame soy, or they think they're going to cut soy out, and they don't know about cutting out sugar and all these other important things that really affect cancer. So thank you for writing this very important book and for joining me today on the show.
Thank you so much, Bhavani. It was my pleasure.
You're welcome. And everyone out there listening, have a great rest of the week. Remember, if you want to sign up to help cook for the homeless, you can do that on my website at ieatgreen.com. Have a great rest of the week. Bye for now.